Nice lunch. I am this afternoon's entertainment. My name is Alex. I work at Zernet, but not on Samba. So my job today is to introduce people, which is a bit awkward because I've never met them before. So who's next? Stephen French. Already mentioned quite a lot this in the morning. Your turn on what's the topic? Sorry, I have memorized it. Samba and Beyond, optimizing access from Linux client to Samba. Quite a long title. So, yeah. Have a lot of fun. Have much fun.
Okay. So after the exciting talks from Tom Talpe this morning, and among others, we get to think about access from Linux. Of course, one of the things we have to remember about all this big picture here is that it's not just Samba. This world has Azure File Server. I work on the Azure team now, optimizing Linux access. It's Max. It's strange file servers, EMC, NetApp, IBM, many others. So I joined the Azure Storage team, the Azure Files team, 3 months ago. So it's been interesting working on that and getting a different perspective on the world, imagining, you know, Azure is a different world, right? The connecting to servers in San Antonio or Seattle, different countries. It's very, very interesting. Now, the activity on the Linux client, I think, has been really cool to talk about. And it's not something we think about a lot in the big picture of Samba sometimes. But I think what is really interesting is to see Samba from the context of how we view it from the Linux client, and also think about how optimal Samba can be when you're going Linux to Linux. So one of the things I thought was really interesting, it's 1 a.m, Longley and I are sitting, you know, over there, and I just fired up some quick tests to Samba, realizing how much better we are in some cases than NFS, just trying random stuff. Like, do you really every day wake up and think, wow, Samba's really cool for my Linux to Linux stuff? We ought to be able to build Samba. We ought to be able to do any development activity over an SMB3 mount. One of the things I found so interesting moving to Azure is how convenient it is to store files like build scripts for Samba, build scripts for the kernel in Azure. So when you're at Starbucks and you brought the wrong laptop, you can copy them down easily. Okay, so quiz question, when did the last kernel come out? Anybody remember? You read your LWN when the last kernel came out? About 3 days ago, and it changed its name. It is now a merciless moray. So opinion question, is that a better motto, is that a better name for the kernel than the fearless coyote, the moray eel? I don't know why Linus picks these names.
Jeremy. Sure, it's Linus. No real name.
It could be Jeremy. It really could be. But I really don't know. It's the makefile. Only he can control it, right? So whether he must agree with it, obviously. But I don't know, merciless moray. So we are at 4.17 kernel, and interesting quiz, you guys have a number of laptops around here. I see some ThinkPads back there. I see some to-be-nameless Dell machines around here. What kernels are you guys running? 4.16, good. Now, what kernel am I running?
4.18.
Exactly. How'd you know? I'm running, okay, the kernel is 2 days old. I downloaded the kernel while on the airplane, but it's 2 days old. That's not bad. So this is absolutely current Linux that we're running this presentation on. Okay, so what drives the discussions? In Samba, we talk about security stuff, and if you're sitting at Volker's talk next door, I'm sure you're, you know, the things that drive discussions, you know, in Volker's world may be a little different. So what do I sit through? I sit through, you know, we're in Park City, Utah. What are they talking about? Well, one of the things they talk about is that four-letter word, Rich Ackle, and why Rich Ackle hasn't merged for the last 20 years. actually only 11, but still it seems that way. We had that discussion at lunch, so I brought that up. But, you know, what are the topics that come up at the File System Summit? It's exactly what Tom was talking about. RDMA, very fast storage, very fast network interfaces. What does this change? What does NVMe change? This laptop, right? Running very fast storage. And what does it mean when people can have 40 gig network adapters cheaply? Obviously, we found bugs where requests completed before they were sent. You guys have seen those kind of bugs in Samba, I'm sure, where a request completed before it's sent. We ran into those kind of bugs a few years ago in the kernel. We hadn't received an ACK yet, and yet we received a response. So these change, these fine bugs. Also, things like, you know, priority, the new StatX API. So I don't know, we've been pushing this for a long time, but Dave Howell's finally merged last year the StatX API, the extended stat API, so it can return Samba metadata, creation time, things like that. One of the things that came up at the File System Summit is the copy API. There is a clone range API. There's also a copy range API. NFS, SMB client, various other things support it, but Samba doesn't use it. Rsync doesn't use it. Very strange, right? This is the best way to copy a file, but we don't actually call it in enough tools. And of course, the other thing is shifting the cloud. What does shifting the cloud mean? Well, longer latencies, and you're obviously coexisting between object and file semantics, which creates interesting performance problems. So here we are at Park City a few months ago. You can see the file system team. It's an amazing group of people. You'll probably recognize some of the people from various storage events over the years. Now, another quiz question. What's the most active file system in Linux? You guys know? EXT4? Nope, not even close. Not even close. That's number two or three, depending on how you count it. ButterFS, 826 change sets. Now, normally, size of the module does correlate with this, but XFS is larger, right? And so ButterFS for years and XFS have been dominating this. They get the most love of any file systems. So ButterFS number one, XFS number two or three, depending on how you count the VFS layer itself. And then something you may not think about, the flash file system, F2FS, is now active. Now, what is the next most popular thing? You might think, you know, there's 50 other file systems in Linux. Well, it's NFS and SMB, right? So these are the next most popular file systems in terms of activity and love. They get the most attention. So one of the things that's been fascinating to me is looking at how NFS compares with SMB. NFS client activity is down 40% this year. 40% drop. SMB activity, on the other hand, is up 50%. It's very fun. And a lot of that's in the last 6 months. It's been neat to see. So EXT4, the activity's been flat for years, about 200 change sets. It gets less activity than SIFS. It gets less activity than NFS. Now, a lot of people here work on Samba. Samba's a server. How big is the NFS server? Any ideas? About 20,000-ish lines of code, right? You look at how big the NFS server is, and it gets 140 change sets a year. Metz, how many change sets did Samba have last year? I did a rough guess. No, it was thousands. Oh, just you, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the number I pulled up may be off a little bit because I was kind of just quickly looking at the change logs, but the number I came up with was closer to 4,300 change sets. Now, I'm not counting like all releases. I'm just counting the most current releases. The most current release, right? But 4,300 change sets. Now, think about that. NFS had 130. Samba had 4,300 change sets. So why are we talking about NFS? This is weird. Also, size. Like, Samba is 100 times bigger than NFS in Linux. Now, of course, to be fair, if you're just comparing file server, it's only 10 or 20 times bigger. NFS has lots of dialects. SMB has lots of dialects. Anyway, so what's my goal? My goal is to make SMB3 the fastest, most secure, general-purpose way to access file data. Obviously, we have blob APIs. We have other things. There are lots of use cases where SMB over blocks makes sense. You know, you can mount swap over NFS. You can map block devices over NFS or SMB. But other than object APIs, the general purpose way to access file data, the most secure, the fastest, I want to be SMB3. And I want to implement all reasonable Linux semantics. You know, we don't want to do bike shedding, right? We make the POSIX extensions huge. But this minimalist set that allows us to get all reasonable Linux semantics. So as Linux evolves, we can continue to, you know, add new features and quickly add them to Linux. Now, what's happened this year? Well, we've improved performance a lot. We've done POSIX extensions. We've added SMB 3.1.1 full support. We've improved security. Lots of new features. So what did we talk about last time? Last time, we talked about getting full SMB 3.1.1 support. So wherever Aurelian is, we need to thank him for some of that. Remember that patch that you sent? That kicked off some good work. SMB 3.1.1 is now in. Okay, StatX. We talked about this for years. Dave Howells put StatX in. We added support for StatX, so now you can return the birth time a little bit more conveniently. I'll show that. And return whether it's compressed or encrypted. Oh, by the way, Samba needs to fix this. One of the things that I was going to demo a couple things in StatX, and I wasn't able to demo one of them. So I went into ext4, and I compressed a file, marked it compressed. And it comes back, you know, the StatX API shows it compressed. But Samba doesn't show it compressed. Now, it would if it's like ButterFS, but for ext4, it doesn't show it compressed. Okay, so what else? Improved POSIX compatibility. We're going to talk about that. It's in progress. We had some good demos. Jeremy's trees out there on samba.org, and we have some test code, and I'll talk about that more in the later afternoon presentation, but I can show you a couple quick things about it now. But that's very exciting. And then, of course, ACLs and security improvements. Sharish and others have done some nice work there helping out. Okay, so here's something very easy to talk about. Everybody has mounted before. So here's an example from, the airplane, I think, a few days ago, of mount. We're sending, I think, 11 requests. 35% fewer requests than before. Mount's more efficient. We're caching the root file handle. When we have direct releases finished off, Pavel and others and Ronnie have been doing some feedback on that. When we do better handle caching, you'll see this even better still. But 35% more efficient mount than it was 3 months ago. This is in the kernel now. This is in the 4.18 RC. So, back to thanking Aurelian again. Okay, here's the same mount. Okay, so we did a 3.1.1 mount. Now you did a 3.1 mount with seal mount option encryption, or you could go into Samba and mark it as must-have encryption. Notice the frames are encrypted there. Which brings up a really interesting point. How the heck do you trace this? Well, we'll get to that. How would you do any tracing? Because you can't see any of the frames other than, negotiate and session setup. Okay, so SMB3 is a four-letter word perhaps, but it's not as bad a four-letter word as CIFS, right? So people are scared of CIFS. So how do we re-image this? One of the things that I got to thinking about, and we were talking with some Microsoft guys about, ext2, you can type insmod ext2. There is no ext2 module by default. When you want to load ext2, it loads ext4. And NFS also has multiple module names as well. So what if we initially do something nice like call the sifs module an alias? You want to load SMB3, you don't have to be calling it sifs. So it doesn't scare the government regulators as much. Now, eventually, maybe we can do some of the things like NFS, depending on what module you load, you actually get different behavior. Maybe in a release or two, we could disable legacy dialects if you loaded SMB3. Maybe that's an option. Right now, it's loading SMB3 versus SIFS, same thing, it's just an alias. But I also added a module info parm that we could change later if we desire, and get some feedback from you guys, disable legacy dialects. So here, Notice I'm doing a mod probe and passing in disable legacy dialects equals 1. You can also change this through sysfs. And notice now I'm trying to mount with verse equals 1.0. I'm trying to mount with sifs. Get an error. If you look at the error, it says mount with legacy dialects is disabled. So sifs may be a four-letter word, but it's easy to disable now. You can't even, if you turn legacy dialects off in the module load params, you can't even mount with verse equals 1. So we're trying to reimagine SMB, the module, remind people that SMB 3.1.1 really is the most secure way to access your data in some cases. Okay, but that brings up the interesting question. Okay, let's say you're using encryption and everything else. Now it's hard to, Wireshark isn't as useful for you, even with Aurelion's new changes and the various things that have been going into Wireshark to make it easier to parse SMB frames because it's encrypted. Well, Linux has had this subsystem called Trace, well, ftrace, for a number of years. And the XFS guys were talking to Ronnie and I at the File System Summit and saying, why aren't you using ftrace in sifs.ko? And so using some examples from NFS and some examples from XFS, it was fairly easy to add some trace points, and we've been gradually extending that. We need your feedback as developers on what other trace points you want added. Right now, it's just, you can see the list in a minute, but the sets of trace points are basically a few obvious ones, and then whatever people, whatever we needed for debugging. But it's a super easy infrastructure. There's nice man pages on it. Trace.cmd, here's an example of how to use it. Type trace-cmd start. Dash E lets you could put in wildcards. The types of trace points we have right now end with done for things that succeed or ERR for things that fail. So you could search for, sifs, trace points, and use wildcards for failures like ERR. Or you could turn on or off individual trace points. Very easy infrastructure to use. So here we do an amount and a touch. And then we're going to show all you have to do, trace-cmd show. This is a lot easier to use than dmessage. And here's an example of what you see as the top section is the currently enabled trace points. And an example of what the detail of the trace point is here's the one for FSCTL errors, is at the bottom. And then here's the example output. But notice something really interesting. So in this case, I did a mount. So you see this mount sifs, and I did a touch. So the mount and the touch, you can tell what it did. You can see, and I'm trying to make it consistent so it's very easy to correlate Samba logs. So if you're Jeremy and you got a bug in the POSIX extensions, and I give Jeremy a log, he can correlate it with his Samba log easily. So you have the SID, you have the TID, you have the command, you have the mid, you have the status code. So if you look at these things, I'm trying to make sure we have the SID, the TID, and for file operations, the persistent file handle. Right, so these are fairly consistent and easy to grep for, easy to analyze, make debugging and problem determination easier, correlating server and client logs, and it's a lot easier. Okay, some other examples besides trace-cmd of cool things. Splice. Somebody was mentioning GNOME, so they were going through the file manager and dragging files, and they weren't as fast as they expected. He gave me an example of a tool, GIO copy, to use. We found there was a generic entry point missing. Code was already in, all ready for it, just entry point was missing for splice. Splice write. It's splice read was there, but not write. So this significantly improved the performance of SendFile and certain other things that use splice write. Okay, StatX. Remember we talked about Dave Howells adding StatX. If you look at what we're doing here, we added set and get fadder support. So the top line, we're setting an attribute, some adder to some value. And you can see we're getting it back with no problem. So this worked for sifs. It was added for SMB3 last year. So these are things that changed in the last year. StatX was added about 9 or 10 months ago, 8 months ago, something like that. If you look at what we have with StatX, notice the birth time. Stat has, it's funny, when you type stat today, it returns birth time with kind of its dashes across it or something, right? Like it's disabled. It's like, why is it even bothering? But with StatX, you can now return the birth time. So whether you're talking about, you know, XFS or ButterFS or SMB or NFS, you can now return the birth time. And also the attributes. Now, this was a little bit unfortunate because in this particular example, it should have also showed compressed, but Samba doesn't call statx yet, so it doesn't recognize that the file is compressed, even though it is. But if you do it on a local file system, you would see that the attributes show up. And this would work to a Windows server or whatever. You'd see the file attributes coming back. They're compressed, they're encrypted. And let's see. If you don't want to use statx, there's a pseudo x adder that was added as well, creation time. So here's the encoded creation time, and here's the DOS attributes if you ever wanted to return the DOS attributes of the file. So we have a pseudo x adder. So as you saw, we dumped all the x adders for the file up there, and it's not visible, but we have these two pseudo x adders to return creation time or DOS attributes if you have a backup application that needs to get at those. So let's talk about by release. So in 4.9, we had various reconnect improvements. We allowed you to override the number of credits if you had a server bug, because we ran into that some of the test events. Those query file attributes versus xadder was added back in 4.9, what I just showed you. If we go to fast forward to 4.11, this is about 13 months ago. Once again, more reconnect improvements. Germano had done some good work on this. We have a lot of work still to do on reconnect. There's a lot of corner cases, the lock sequence number, for example. I'll talk about that in a little bit. We added improvements to server-side copy. I think if you remember what Sachin did, he sort of re-enabled the copy chunk command. Then the SMB3 DFS support that Aurelian did about 13 months ago. And then, of course, Pavel's work on the encryption support for SMB3. So mounting to Azure, in Azure's case, if you're mounting over public network, you're going to be required to use SMB3 encryption. That work is possible. It's kind of cool to mount to Azure with an encrypted share, by the way. Okay, so that was added about 13 months ago, and it's been backported by various releases as well. Okay, so in 4.12, AIO support improved significantly, and I added an API for enumerating snapshots. There's still a little bit of work to do to mount with the time warp token, but you can list them. Okay, going fast forward to 4.13, and this was a big deal. Now, I think, Tom, you mentioned this, right? About SIFs and killing SIFs and NedPile and all that stuff.
Killing the
SMB1 implementation and the desire to...
I frequently mentioned killing off the SMB1.
Yep. So if you one of the reasons I had that disable legacy dialect option, and of course the other part of that was changing the default dialect. So it was changed in two stages. In 4.13, we defaulted to a single dialect. We always default to a single dialect before that point. It used to be verse equals one, then it moved to verse equals three. Then in 4.14, after upgrading to SMB3, we added the code to allow multi-dialect negotiation, SMB2.1, SMB3, and SMB3.02. So if you mount to Samba, you'll get a 3.02. If you mount to Windows, you get a 3.02 typically. We also added the xadder support for SMB2, which I think or SMB3 and SMB2, which I just showed you a few minutes ago. So that was actually very interesting because now we broke apps, right? So when you mount, you'll see you're using a default dialect. If you need to use the insecure SIFs, mount with verse equals one. But it broke some things because of the lack of POSIX extensions. We knew that, but there wasn't much you could do trying to get security. We talked about the splice write performance improvement. The support for SMB Direct, RDMA, so Long Lee's work was added in 4.16. 4.17, we added signing support for SMB Direct and support for SMB 3.1 encryption, pre-auth integrity. The general message you want to get about 4.17 is SMB 3.1.1 is stable enough to use now. It's no longer experimental. Okay, so 2 days ago, things had just merged. 38 changes, whatever. We have various RDMA improvements, and go listen to Long Lee's talk, and I'll explain more about that. the new SMB3 alias, so you can do an INS mod SMB3. You can disable verse equals one through that module parm I mentioned. The ftrace support that I demoed earlier is there, and also the performance improvement where the root file handle is now being cached. So we're no longer doing open query close every time you stat the root directory. You had a question?
Do INS mod SMB3, does that automatically disable unsecured
ILs? This was a point that I was hinting at earlier, and I want feedback on. What I wanted to do first, I wanted to do this at two stages, and love feedback on this. INS mod SMB3, right now, just like EXT4, if you INS mod EXT2, it works.
Just a synonym.
But where I want to get to, possibly in one release, is if you INS mod SMB3, that new module parm that I added at the same time flips to legacy disabled.
Why wouldn't you wait one release for that? Why wouldn't you just make that the behavior?
Partly because I don't want...
Yeah. Question one was, does INS mod SMB3 disable legacy dialects? No, was the answer.
Yeah.
And then it was pointed out that make INS mod SMB3 an iterative process where for a while it's a synonym and then later it applies a restriction.
Well,
I just wonder why not go straight to a restriction.
I'm perfectly happy to follow that advice. What I wanted was feedback from others on what it might break, what it might not break.
To me, it seems the most logical behavior, and it won't surprise people twice.
Yeah. So I'm perfectly happy to do that. You know, would love opinions and feedback. Go ahead. Jeremy.
Yeah, I must agree with Tom. If you say INS mod SMB3 and you're able to get SMB1 support, I think that's a bug.
Okay. So then the related question...
When you're inserting a module that says SMB3, that's what you should be getting. If the kernel supports it, you ask for it. The fact that you can fall back and mount an earlier version is just a bug and wrong.
Okay.
Personally.
So by the way, this... We've got, you know, 13 days to make that change, so this is okay. And this is part of the reason, but once again, we're trying to re-image SMB3 as secure and remind people it ain't SIFS anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a related part of that that's work maybe Pavel and Aurelian and others can give advice on, and that's if you wanted SMB1, you did an INS mod SMB3 first, or maybe you did it because of something in a script or something at boot time, we do have to have a way of, you know, INS mod SIFS or something that re-enables SMB3. Sorry, re-enables SIFS. Go ahead.
Couldn't this behavior change on whether the mount gets the option SMB3 instead of SIFS, instead of...
Sure.
Having this tied to the module name.
Well, I think they both matter.
Yeah, sure.
I think they both matter. And I agree with you completely that another part of that, and that's the user space tool thing, is mount.sifs could be symlinked if we wanted, or a separate module, mount.smb3. And we could be telling people to mount-t-smb3. And that's easy. That's a user space. We could symlink it, or we could create a separate...
I mean, that should also change the behavior in the
kernel. Absolutely, completely. I completely agree with you. Now, that's a little easier in a way because changing user space code is trivial. It's a little harder in a way because the distros won't automatically pick up the new mount helper. But I think that's a complementary change, right? Is that we have a mount SMB3, and if you load a mount SMB3, it INS mods SMB3 and it doesn't do verse equals one.
I mean, you may want to also load both names, load INS mod SMB3 and then later INS mod SIFS.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking of, is that when you INS mod SIFS, that re-enables verse equals one, but only for mount SIFS, not for mount SMB3.
Yeah, I think.
And we can forbid that in user space. The problem, and I do want to make sure you're like aware of this, is that the mount helper is an optional utility. You can do all this stuff without the mount helper, so we have to be able to... We have to be able to forbid it in kernel, not just in user space.
Yeah, we definitely need the module option so that if distribution wants to disable this by default, they would have this module option installed through modutils. Yeah.
And by the way, if we need other ways to lock down the protocol, SE, Linux, whatever, that's great. I think the combination of the instmod, the legacy dialect disabled, the mount.smb3, so you can mount-t, smb3, the combination of these will help the bigger picture of we can make a lockdown secure system. And then complementary with that, super important, is these POSIX extensions, so we are never regressing an application that worked to Samba.
Yeah. How much of that is backportable? What from all these features is dependent on the kernel, actual kernel version, or you self-contained?
So that's actually a really good question. I did an experiment about 3 months ago, 2 months ago, where I backported everything. So there's a GitHub tree out there, and there's in the wiki, the Samba wiki, it points to the GitHub tree, where every patch made it back to 4.9, except for global kernel changes. And there was a few examples of that. Like, for example, yesterday, proc changed. Well, we don't care that proc changed, but that patch can't be backported. Basically, 95% of the patches are relevant for backport, and all of them I was able to backport to 4.9, 4.10, 4.11, 4.12. So I have a full backport tree available. I have not updated it for this, now the 4.17's out. I need to re-add those patches. But basically what I've done, and I want to make sure we have these, so these security fixes can be done easily by distros. By here's everything. I think in some cases that's less risky than the selective backport approach. Okay, bug status. Most of these bugs are actually not that bad. One thing I wanted to just flag on the kernel.org bugzilla, I've been asking Ronnie and some of the Red Hat testers to try to flag bugs that are related to XFS tests so we can find those, because we're doing a lot of work in improving automated testing. Okay, compounding, super exciting. Ronnie has done some great work here. The hard work's done. They've separated. The way compounding works is really cool. Here's an example of Ronnie's code doing compounding on DF. So it's a statfs. Notice all of these being sent as one request, the highlighted frame. If you look at how it's created, you do an open init, set next command, set your query info as the related command, then the close as a related command. And of course, you send it off. It's a very easy semantic to follow. There are some really good changing subjects here to really good reconnect improvements that have been done. We do need to fix something that Pavel has been debugging a lot, this E again that can occur on pending ops when we're doing a reconnect. Also resetting the credits on reconnect, I need some help on that one, figuring out if that needs to be done. And then server-to-server failover, some cases where the server crashes, we have an alternate target. Witness protocol has been one thing we've talked about, but also the SMB redirection with DFS. The SysACL mount option is now supported. The security features have much improved. We only support one encryption algorithm right now, just like Samba. Only one of the two. One thing I've been talking about with some others is a pass-through ioctl. There are literally hundreds of ioctls out there, and a surprising number actually work to Windows over the SMB, and to Macs, and even to Samba. So we need some little Python wrapper code to call this. So as root or whatever, you can call an fsctl, an ioctl, which in kernel passes it over the wire as an fsctl. There's some examples of this, enumerating streams, for example, that may be useful for people. Okay, so what else is worth talking about? There's two new APIs in Alviro's tree, a statfs. And a new mount API. We need to finish up the code for that. We talked about the ioctls. Clustering integration, something Aurelian and others have talked about. So, we have the witness protocol user space Samba client and have it just blocked in the kernel. So when we have failover, share, move, we can automatically do that. There's some performance features we need to talk about. Okay, I'm going to talk about the POSIX extensions in more detail later, but just as an FYI, this is to Jeremy's code. This was done, a couple days ago, 3 days ago. As you can see, we're able to create files with different modes, and it works, and we're able to create an upper and a lower without conflicts, a directory and a file with the same name, differing in case, the rename stuff now, rename over an open file. Also, this is super important. Is NFS fast or is it NFS slow? If you Google this, it's like, oh, sadly, Windows users are forced to use SMB. It's so sad, Tom. You're forced to use SMB. And you Google this stuff, and you're like, what are you talking about? This is dead wrong, guys. This is a myth. This is myth, like, this is insane. So, like, last night, I just tried this. Like, okay, I did FIO, okay? I mean, this was from last week. So even simple DD commands. So this was, so last night, it's 1 a.m, Long Lee and I are sitting there, right? We're like, look at this, 29% faster, SMB3. Okay, 29% faster, the first thing I tried, okay? The second thing I tried, so it's a coincidence. Well, let's try FIO because that's a respected test, right? So think about this. It's 1 a.m. I'm not doing it. This is defaults. I'm just mounting to Samba and mounting to NFS. This is NFS 4.2. It's the latest stuff. This is Samba. This isn't some special Jeremy tree. This is just Ubuntu. This is just this laptop. This is just Ubuntu. Like, SMB3 was 20% faster for read, 21% faster for write. I didn't do anything. Oh, whoa, Samba's terrible. No, no, use NFS. Like, oh, sadly, NFS isn't on. You know, it's like, guys, really? And the irony is, of course, is that where NFS was actually faster, where a few cases I tried to Windows, right? There were a couple of cases where the Windows NFS server was a bit faster. But, you know, guys, look at this. This is the standard random read-write workload. So there is a myth. But let's be fair. SMB is slower in a lot of cases. Until the compounding stuff's in, until direct releases are in, these large directories, we're terrible. We're awful compared to some other protocols. And there's a lot of stuff we can do to make it even better still, though. So we're 29% faster for random and sequential read-writes, big I.O., small I.O., whatever, great. When we put these things all in, just the kind of things Long Lee and Pavel and I were talking about with, hey, let's do multi-channel, like Windows does by default. We won't have a single bottleneck on the receive thread. Like, we are going to crush some of the alternatives here. And there's a lot of features to put in, a lot of features still to put in that can help us here. We got some fun work to do. Listen to Pavel's talk, or sorry, listen to Long Lee's talk next. Look at this, 92% utilization on InfiniBand, 85% on iWarp. It's getting better, guys. And obviously, it's doing better for larger IOs and small IOs. Small IOs, there's a lot of work, and he'll be able to go into that. But this RDMA stuff is really fun. And there's a lot of neat stuff we can do to improve the metadata thing that's a problem. So when is SMB good? When you need security. When is it good? When you don't have the large directories that kill our performance until we have the compounding and the direct releasing in. Where's it good? Where you don't need case sensitivity. Well, we're going to fix that really soon because, as you saw, the prototype is working really nicely for the POSIX extensions. But today, if you need case sensitivity, you'd either have to use SIFS, bad for security, or NFS. Well, where else is SMB good? RDMA. Well, you know, RDMA is looking pretty good for SMB3. It's getting better. And when we have multi-channel, better still. Where else do you use SMB3? Well, if you want a global namespace, where else? Well, you want snapshots, encryption, all these thousands of SMB3 features. And, of course, to the cloud. I work in Azure. I think it's really cool that I can store my presentation in San Antonio somewhere, or Germany, or France, and I don't have to worry about where the stupid thing's stored. It just works. And, of course, there's Max and various other things. It's really cool. So just an FYI, we're doing a lot of testing. So Ronnie, some of the Red Hat testers, Aurelian, others, a lot of work being done here. It's easy to set up. There's a wiki there that describes it. Please open bugs on things that aren't already tagged. We're trying to tag them with the Bugzilla number in the wiki. We're also trying to make sure that we identify which ones are fixed by the Unix extensions, which ones really aren't worth fixing, because, you know, who cares? This is a local thing you'd never care about on a network, and which ones are really bugs. And, of course, there's even some Samba bugs in there that we found in the historically, so it's very likely we'll find other Samba bugs as we go through this. Okay, future looks awesome for Linux and SMB3. I encourage you guys to listen to Long Lee's RDMA talk and then to come back at 5 when we have the Jeremy and Relian and I and others can talk about the POSIX extensions and where we are with that and maybe give some examples and demos of the current state of the POSIX extensions. Anyway, additional resources are going to be listed in the handouts or the slides when they're posted to the site. And this is really cool, but let's remember the one myth. we are not always worse than NFS. Samba is a good server, really. Really, Samba is good. So it's pretty cool. Okay, well, thank you guys for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much. We have 5 minutes left for questions, if there are any. Okay.
Maybe you were saying Long is going to talk about this, but why was iWarp and IB Rocky, why did they have different performance totals? Was it an SMB level issue or?
Well, good question. Let's pass the mic to.
So the question is that why RDMA works on InfiniBand better than iWarp? Or is the.
Steve's number showed a slight difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the InfiniBand is running on 40G, the effective data rate is 32G, and for iWAP it's 40G on the line speed. So the benchmark shows higher output on the iWAP. Make sense?
Yeah. InfiniBand, so-called 40G, has it's an 8 out of 10 encoding, so it gets an effective 32-ish gig. There are some other InfiniBand link layers that use a 64/66 encoding and get a faster throughput. So I'm going to guess there may be a CPU bottleneck in there somewhere that just can't quite clear 30-something gigabits, can't make full use of a 40-gigabit link. That's a little bit disappointing, but as we know, there's still some data copies in the loop that need to be addressed.
Yeah. And I think it's important to realize that some of the direct I.O. changes will help a lot with the CPU.
DirectIO will change a ton. I'm really happy to see those patches.
So right now, all of them are merged except the last three of 14 in your set, right? So we've just got three more patches to review from that set to finish up the DirectIO. And then you'll be able to get even better data for some of this.
Yeah, the big problem with DirectIO is that the application has to request it.
Right.
Not all will, but whatever. Maybe they want a cache.
The good news is things coming out of the page cache, right? You've got vectored I.O. coming out of the page cache. So a lot of these workloads, they populate the page cache and then it gets flushed.
It's all good. It's all good. It's just where it all adds up. Right?
And I'm super excited about this idea of especially if anybody wants to help with, I don't know, if Sachin or others can make some progress on multi-channel on the server side. We want to at least make some of the general code cleanup things, so multi-channel is going to be more implementable soon. Because this is the time to do it. While we're restructuring things for RDMA and compounding, there's a sort of a logical time to touch some of that same code for multi-channel. Because multi-channel will provide some of the same benefits it does for Linux as it does for Windows. Where even to a single adapter case, there may be examples where it's faster.
Oh, multi-channel is definitely good for single adapter as well.
Yeah.
We learned that real early in the multi-channel RDMA work for Windows.
And I think even more so for Linux, where we have a sort of bottleneck in the receive thread.
Yeah, you distribute interrupts better. You better use firmware channels, parallel firmware channels. Yeah. Multiple queue pairs can overcome network congestion better, all kinds of good reasons.
And you know, the funny thing is NFS doesn't support multi-channel, right? So the data we were showing here was actually faster, even without multi-channel. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So other questions?
I may have to interrupt here because time is up completely. So the next is Andreas Schneider, I think. Or am I wrong?
Thanks, Steve.
Yep. No. Oh, sorry, a long name. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you very much. It seems that you Zamba guys have much fun. Maybe I switch the development team.